I remember sitting on that balcony every Saturday morning while I was in college here in La Sierra University. Coming to church meant getting away from the stress of college life. It was a time to wind down from a hectic schedule and reflect on the meaning of life, faith, sometimes girls, and the all-important question, what do I want to do with my life? One fateful Sabbath, I had a revelation. Ironically, the sermon that day was the study of the book of Revelation. No correlation at all. But maybe all that talk about the end times may have inspired me to take a leap of faith. I decided to drop out of school, sorry, La Sierra, chase a dream, and pursue my passion. That passion is music. My name is Jerome Fontemillas, and I play in a rock and roll band called Switchfoot. For those of you who aren't familiar with our band, here's just a quick sample of some songs you may have heard on the radio or TV. And for you rockers out there. And this song is probably on the radio right now as we speak. We have been a band for 20 years, and last week we released our 10th studio album called Where the Light Shines Through, available on iTunes and Spotify. So what does Switchfoot mean? Switchfoot is a surfing term. How many surfers do we have out there? All right. It means to switch your stance or put a different foot forward. Some of the guys in the band grew up surfing and named the band after their love for the ocean. That is one of our band members, Tim Foreman, catching a wave. While our love for travel and the ocean connects us in brotherhood and friendship, music is our true passion. The songs we write and perform are honest and are a direct reflection of who we are as people. We often get asked the question, are you guys a Christian band? That's a great question. And some of you guys over here may be wondering that same thing. For me, we are Christians by faith, not by genre. We discovered that the moment you put a label on our music or allow others to label us, it limits the scope of what we are trying to accomplish as artists. And it could also limit our impact on the world around us. Our faith is a big part of who we are, and we've never shied away from that. We all grew up in Christian homes. I grew up as an Adventist. The songs we write are very personal, yet people can relate to it. We tend to ask the tough questions. Questions about life, death, God, politics, and relationships. These songs resonate with all kinds of people who are searching for truth and meaning. Bob Dylan, an American singer-songwriter, once said, "The purpose of music is to elevate the spirit and inspire. It puts you in tune with your own existence." I believe this to be true. Through music, we express, motivate, heal, escape, whisper and shout through songs of both darkness and light. We've had people come up to us at shows and say things like, "Hey, that song really helped me through a tough time," or "That song inspired me to do something with my life." I find it amazing and an honor to write a song at 2 a.m. when I myself am trying to figure out the meaning of life and have that song become so universal. And that's how I see our songs. Honest, and everyone can relate to them. Yet, we are just a small part of the equation. You see, I believe that the healer of souls uses music in a transcendent way to open up our eyes and hearts to see a purpose bigger than just ourselves. That is why I am a musician. People often ask, "So you guys have sold millions of albums, played in front of thousands of people all over the world, and even won a Grammy. Do you feel like you've achieved the successful career you've been after? And what is it like to be a rock star?" I remember when I got my Grammy, my dad turned to my mom and said, "Wow, looks like our son does have a real job after all." Fortunately for me, while I am truly proud of the hard work it represents and thankful for the recognition from my peers, a pretty shiny award does not define who I am. In fact, my sons and I have found a good use for it besides collecting dust on the shelf. Bono, a lead singer for the Irish rock band U2, who has been a huge inspiration to our band, gave us a piece of advice years ago when we were just starting out. He told us, "You guys will do well if you learn to navigate through the valley of distractions." When I look back on that, my journey, those words have proven so true. From being dropped by a record label to being picketed outside our concerts by the Westboro Baptist Church because our music isn't Christian enough. From winning a Grammy and talking about breaking up the band at one point, we definitely had our share of distractions, but we have always faced it head on. You see, the goal was never to sell a million records. The struggle was, how can I be the same person on stage as off, when I'm alone at home or with my family? Being a musician means living out the words you sing. Yes, we play music because we love it, but even more so, we play music because we want to see things change within ourselves and in the world around us. These are songs of hope and of new beginnings, and I'm always trying to get better at living that out in my own life. The one question I get asked the most is, how do you juggle playing music, touring, traveling, and family life? It really boils down to three main things. First and foremost, my family keeps me grounded. They believe in my calling more than I believe in it myself sometimes. They understand the sacrifice, the days and weeks I'm away, and they support it. They push me to be better as a musician and even more so as a human being. They also expect me to be a dad and a husband when I'm at home, and I love that. They are the ones who constantly drop me off at the airport and pick me up. My 2-year-old thinks I work on an airplane because of how often we frequent Ontario and LAX. People think my life is pretty glamorous, traveling around the world, performing concerts, and I admit it does have its share of perks. Go frequent flyer miles. But I only need to remind them that sometimes the glamorous life means playing a show in front of thousands of people and then walking off stage to change a messy diaper, or coming home from tour and immediately shifting gears to doing the dishes, scrubbing the toilets, and taking my 6-year-old son to school and taekwondo, and then giving my wife a break from making dinner by cooking some super fancy ramen. Yes, My family will always be my priority. And if ever there was a conflict between work, music, and family, I will always choose family, no questions asked. The second thing that helps me navigate my unusual career choice is the support of my church family and friends. When I first started playing with Switchfoot, we made a conscious decision to intentionally play in the most uncomfortable and dark places around the world. That included playing in the dirtiest clubs with some of the craziest bands out there. That also meant sometimes playing to an audience intent on letting us know how much they dislike us and our music, and particularly for what we stand for. Those were challenging times for me and my faith. It was rare for an Adventist church to support a rock and roll musician, but this church did. Amen. I would often call Pastor Sam Lenore, Sam, early on when I first started with the band, seeking words of wisdom and advice, and I still do. The mainstream media would often ask about my faith and why I believe, and I remember having a conversation with Sam in a low moment with the band, right after I got off stage, just being pelted with beads and beer bottles, feeling dejected and broken. I was wrestling with whether this was worth all the trouble. I will always remember his piece of advice. He said, "You are there for a reason. Be the light in the darkness." A few years later, a bunch of you guys here at church came out to what I think was the biggest audience I've ever played in front of. 250,000 people under the St. Louis Arch. Though all you can see is a sea of heads, I saw that night was you guys who have been there for me from the beginning. This church family. Thank you for that. The third thing that keeps me going is remembering that music is not only my passion, it is also a platform. It is my voice, my opportunity for change. A little over a decade ago, we sat on a flight home from Australia and dreamt of how we could give something back to our hometown. We decided to rally around our community and invest in homeless and at-risk youth in San Diego, who just needed a helping hand. We felt an urgent need to join together with these kids who are fighting for hope, to come alongside them and let them know that their stories matter. They matter. That is how the Switchfoot Bro-Am was born. It started out as a small contest and concert on the beach, and has grown each year in ways we never could have dreamed. Last weekend marked our 12th and biggest year yet. So far, the Bro-Am Foundation, along with the incredibly generous people and local businesses in San Diego, have been able to raise over $1.5 million for these amazing kids over the last 12 years. These kids have inspired me more than they will ever know. Through their stories, they have encouraged me to keep going. Through the eyes of the underprivileged and neglected, I see a promise of hope. To me, they are where the light shines through. So why do I sing? Why do any of us sing? We sing because we're alive. We sing because we are broken. We sing because we refuse to believe that hatred is stronger than love. We sing because melodies begin when words fail. We sing because the wound is where the light shines through. We sing because hope deserves an anthem. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Jerome from Switchfoot, and he's a member here. You remind me, Jerome, of a story I told the church a few months ago about a night in Hollywood. In Hollywood, when it was raining, there were a group of people pressed together in the rain underneath an umbrella. The women wore white shirts and long black skirts. The men wore long coats and top hats. The rain distracted no one. On the corner of Hollywood and Highland, a few steps from the Pantages Theater, closer to the Chinese Theater, where the Hollywood Walk of Fame were, the place was crowded that night while this group sang out, "I have decided to follow Jesus." No turning back, no turning back. They were not deterred by the rain. They were not deterred by Hollywood. They were not deterred by the drug needles in the corner and the ground in the alleyways or the neon signs offering sexual services every few blocks. Not deterred by the crowds of tourists, by the intoxicated wanderers, not deterred by the police even. Though no one join me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back. That group of faithful witnesses sang out into the night sky, "I have decided to follow Jesus." It's an overt witness to stand on the corner of a Hollywood and a Highland and sing this way. Jerome, the passion of your life has taken you into the darkest places of the world, you said. You are the opposite of what we heard from last week. Some of you were here when Caitlin and Andrew Pedersen told this beautiful story. Some of you heard them. Many of you have said all week long, such a beautiful, inspiring young couple. See, they did it the right way, inspired by their parents and missionary grandparents and teachers. They did, Caitlin and Andrew, they did what we hope all of our young adults, our children, will do at some point. They chose to serve the world. And they're on the islands in Greece watching as refugees get off their rafts and they're giving them food and clothes and shelter as they make their way to their next destination. Caitlin and Andrew inspired us because they did this on their honeymoon. They did, however, the proper thing. They fed people and clothed people and gave them medical care. And then there's Jerome. There's Jerome, who's gone into the darkest places in the world, what Jerome called seedy, seamy places when we spoke there. Where Jerome has gone has looked a lot more like Hollywood and Highland. Loud, obnoxious, intoxicated crowds. Yeah, needles in the alleyways and behaviors we don't name in church. People of all walks of life, all of humanity. Jerome explicitly walked into the world. I've been thinking about this, Jerome. You drop out of a world-class university. We could talk about that this afternoon. You strike it up with four guys with skinny jeans and cool hair. You grab your guitars and your keyboard and your microphone, and you'd call yourselves a band, a rock and roll band, no less. And I was thinking all week long, didn't your parents ever teach you this word from the Bible, this verse, "Be ye therefore in the world, not of it"? Jerome, help the world, but don't get so close. Don't go to those places. Don't stay there for so long. Jerome, what are you thinking? Can you even keep the Sabbath in a rock and roll band? Someone must have asked you. Christians have shortened that idea, be therefore in the world, not of it. We've shortened it to put it on bumper stickers and t-shirts like a slogan, N-O-T-W, it's like a secret handshake. You see it on the backs of people's cars, driving down the freeway, N-O-T-W, right on, that's me too. We know what we're talking about, disciples of Jesus. Some of the bumper stickers are more polite. They say things like, "I am not of this world, God bless you, bless you all." It's a little less exclusive, right? Polite, not of this world. See, we've lived with this tension, not of this world, while we are in this world. It's a popular idea expressed in the Bible, dozens, probably hundreds of times, especially in the New Testament. I'm thinking of the Gospel of John this morning that wrestles continuously all throughout with this idea. In the world and not of it. It is Jesus at that last meal with his suppers, that probably didn't look anything like our table this morning with shiny plates. That last lingering meal when no one wants to go home, when the meal can't ever quite be over. It's during that meal Jesus finally looks to heaven and says, "Father, I'm no longer in this world, but they are." It's strange because Jesus is clearly standing in front of the disciples while he's saying it, or people can hear him. He's clearly present while he's saying, "I'm no longer in the world, but they are." And this illustrates our tension with the world. Can I name quickly this morning in just a few short minutes two of the challenges I see in the Gospel of John as the storytelling goes? The first is this idea that all that is good is above, where heaven is, and all that is darkness or evil is below. The good resides with God, the bad resides with the earth. It's an old, old idea. Ancient Egyptians, Persians, Greek philosophers, this is how we find it in our Bible, the fingerprints of it in our Bible, this idea called dualism, that all that is good is up, God is up, the devil is down, kindness in heaven is up, earth and sin is down. This is illustrated beautifully by this piece of artwork that was created during our 4 days with Jesus this spring. This is Sidney Torres, who on Friday night was given an assignment with the other children to think about creation and illustrate it. You might be able to see in the upper right-hand corner there, Sidney has written the word God, G-O-D, and there's a heart at the top of the picture. And then everything below, the black blob is the earth. And in the center, the yellow person is the humans, humanity, joining the story. And you can see the animals and the sun and the moon and the stars and the water and the trees. And Sidney has helped us with the clarity of the ancient Egyptians or the Persians or the Greek philosophers. She's taken that orange line and drawn it right up there at the top to help us understand all that is good is above. And all that became polluted is down below. Sidney helps us. That orange dividing line. This is the tension we live with in our world, where we're in the world but not of it, and things feel worldly and wrong. At the same time, we know we were created by a God that called us good. So we have this tension, and when our kids were little and I dropped them off at school, I refused to say, "Be good today." It was this great theological conviction. My children are already good. God created them that way. So I said to them, "Be decent today. You're already good. Just choose to do something with your goodness. Be decent today." I remember when the girls were teenagers and I asked them, "You remember when I used to say this to you when we dropped you off at school? So proud of myself, such a theologically correct parental move. Remember when I would say this? Be decent, be decent. You understood what I was saying, right?" "Yeah, pretty much no, Mom. Just kind of another weird thing that you said." Yeah, that's what I was saying. Be good. You're already good. Be decent in the world. This is one of our challenges. We see it in Scripture that we have gotten this idea, everything good is up, everything evil is down. Second challenge is sometimes that word world. We say the world and we think we know what we're all talking about. Well, the world is the world. In the Gospel of John, that word, world, is a favorite word. It's used more than 70 times. The other gospel writers just use it a handful of times. If we stayed another half an hour this morning, I'd dive deep into this one idea, but we're not going to do that. So let me summarize. When the Gospel of John uses the word world, the writer could mean the world as in a geography and a location and a place. We're actually in the world this morning. The author could also mean creation, the created order, the universe, and all that God created as Sidney has represented here. The author could actually mean the earth, specifically this place, not the rest of the universe, but this place. The author could mean humans, humanity, what I'm looking at right here, not the trees and the flowers and the birds and the universe, but people. The author could mean empires, power structures, the government, forces, values, the culture, particularly powers opposed to God. Sometimes it's a layer of those meanings. Yesterday on the news, in response to this tragedy in France, in the middle of the day came a headline. A scroll at the bottom of the screen said, "The world responds." Who is the world in that context? Does that mean the flowers and the rocks and the trees cried out? Does that mean humanity cried out? Does that mean a location cried out? No, it meant, in that context, governments, leaders of the world cried out and responded. This is what we have going on in the Gospel of John. We think when we read the word world, we know what we're talking about. It's not a one-size-fits-all word. When Jesus says, do not love the things of this world, he's talking about power structures and culture and values and norms here. When he says, I am no longer of this world, he means this physical place, this location. And sometimes they all go on top of each other. Look at this verse at the beginning of John's gospel. John chapter 1 says this, 1 verse 10. The light was in the world, and the world came into being through the light, but the world didn't recognize. This is Jesus. Jesus was in the world. This place, this space, with creation, probably, and the world, this space, this place, this creation came into being through the light. But this space, the people, the creation, the power structures, the cultural values, the norms, the pressures, the way things are in the world didn't recognize Jesus. This challenges us, the way the word world is used. I asked Jerome, did your parents teach you? Be ye therefore in the world and not of it. It's actually not a text in the Bible, friends. Can we say that clearly this morning? It's not a commandment of Jesus. Be ye therefore in the world and not of it. You will not, we will not find that text in the Bible written that way. Here's what we do find in the Gospel of John. Words from Jesus in that prayer for his disciples at the final meal, just before the arrest and the trial. I'm no longer in the world, the physical space. Even as I'm coming to you, Holy Father, I gave your word to the world, and they hated them because they, the disciples, don't belong to the world, just as I don't belong to the world. Then Jesus says again, they, the disciples, don't belong to the world, just as I don't belong to the world. I'm not asking that you take them out of this world, but that you keep them safe from the evil one. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. This is what Jesus prays on our behalf. This is what Jesus says. So the tension we feel between the world, we sometimes think we have two options, right? The world is not our home. We sing that song often. The pastors resist that song sometimes in worship. This world is not my home. We feel the tension and we think maybe our options are, well, we're just going to compromise with the world because after all, we're going to have to live here till Jesus takes us home. Second option is we retreat from the world. We protect ourselves. We compromise or we retreat. And I want to say clearly this morning, neither of those options look like the prayer of Jesus. To compromise or to retreat. Jesus gives a third way. Live in this world with protection. For this is the world God made. The world God is now estranged from God. This is the world God intends to save through Jesus. This is the world God so loved. Compromising with the world, retreating for the world are not the options. Living in the world with God's protection becomes the third option. So Adventist friends this morning, retreating, not an option. If we think it's preferable, we're safer if we live out our vocations, our lives in La Sierra or Loma Linda or College Place or College Dale or Tacoma Park or Lincoln, Nebraska. If we think that's the option Jesus is asking for, we haven't read the text. If we think it's preferable to pack ourselves up and go to the mountains or the desert, the text doesn't say, not of the world while you're tucked away in a safe place. Jesus says, protect them while they are fully immersed in the world. Retreating is not faithful to the prayer either. Not of, nevertheless, sent into the world. This is what the Bible teaches. Our mission is in the world while our allegiance is to God. Switchfoot, the lyrics from their album Beautiful Letdown, they summarize some of this from the Gospel of John when they sing, "I don't belong here. I don't belong here. I don't belong here, but I'll carry a cross and a song." Speaking with Jerome earlier in the week, I asked him, if your boys, Parker and Jackson, told you, "Daddy, when we grow up, we're going to pack up and go into the seediest clubs in the world." If they told you and Christy that, you would not say, "Yeah!" Your instinct would be to pull those two boys close, Christy. Your instinct would be the heart of Jesus. Father, protect them while they are in the world. That would be our instinct. We understand then what Jesus is saying. From the Philippines to Chicago to Northern California, check out this Jerome. I understand your son said, "Who's the little girl? She's so cute." From the Philippines to Chicago to Northern California, a piano recital competition to the Inland Empire. Look at that. To early career, Jerome is called a multiple instrumentalist. You got that? A multiple instrumentalist. I only know a couple of you, you and Dr. Rodriguez, for example. A multiple instrumentalist. Grammy award-winning, platinum album-making band, Switchfoot. It's a family commitment that Jerome and Christy have to walk into the darkest places of the world. When I asked Christy to reflect, she shared a couple more pictures with me. This is because they could play on the set of The Tonight Show while she's pregnant with Parker. One of several trips to play on The Tonight Show, because we just do that at La Sierra, you know. Christy says, "Jerome, this about you. I've been honored to have an up-close and personal behind-the-scenes perspective of the struggles, the insecurities, the failures, the accomplishments, and the joys of someone who had the guts to follow a dream at overwhelming odds. You have taught her and us that taking risks and persistence are necessary, that hard work and homework and ignoring criticism and saying yes at the right time and saying no at other times, that all of this matters. Through the seasons of band life, touring, summer festivals, Christy says it's tricky, and yet you are generous with yourself. You are generous with your time." She says what she hopes the boys see, while it's hard to drop you off at the airport, what she hopes they'll see is this generosity you live with. Sometimes people have misconceptions about celebrity. Christy tells us some people think that Jerome must be a millionaire. They must live in a huge house. They must have a lot of cars, that you're going to build the next wing of the church, for example. Before we get excited, Christy says it's just really not that way. But Christy also says there's another misconception that works the other way around. The fans. You can get fatigued thinking about the fans, but Christy says, "Jerome, you have taught her that fans are people too. She loves the way you've built your relationships with the people who call themselves your fans, how you listen to their stories, how you and the band remember their names and their faces, and that in the end, this is why you do the work you do. They have everything in their audience, friends. Every piece of humanity is represented in their concerts. It's all there. Into the darkest places of the world, Jerome, you and your guys have gone, not of, but nevertheless in the world God so loves. Your story reminds me, as we close this morning, that there are Christians and Seventh-day Adventist Christians who enter public life and receive a lot of criticism. I think of teachers who enter the public school system or the public universities, and we criticize internally from the church, why didn't you come to the Adventist school or the Adventist university? I think of musicians at every level. Did you see these kids playing in the orchestra, these teens and young adults? The youngest one was 9 years old playing the cello this morning. Some of these musicians, like our musicians across the street, world-class musicians, they will be in venues around the world in the public life. I think of people like our Rodney Vance making films, receiving his own awards, and people who say to him, can you really be a Christian and do that? Aren't you just going to make Christian films? Please tell us. You'll just do Christian films. I think of young adults who want to become professional athletes, young adults who want to go into the foreign services, armed services, the Peace Corps. They want to work for the United Nations. They want to go into politics. It's somehow it's okay if they're going to be a lawyer, but as soon as they say they want to be a politician, the church goes berserk. I'm thinking of all of you this morning who have chosen the public life, 26-year-old Seventh-day Adventist running for a seat as a state representative in Washington State this year, a graduate of Walla Walla University. Thank you, Jerome, Christy, all of you who enter the public life of the world. It is Jesus who said, I am not asking that you take them out of the world. Keep them safe. I am sending them just as you sent me. Amen.